Welcome. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this. Welcome, everybody. By myself. I would like to welcome y'all to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. The fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland is where I have taken up residence, in the sunny slave South Pacific Island nation. And it's very, very nice, especially this time of year, where, in fact, I was going to make some kind of a lewd reference to sweatiness and parts of the male anatomy, but this is a family show. So we'll go straight to our guest. His name is Scott Onstott, and that's spelt O-N-S-T-O-T-T, and some of the info that he's going to present is assuredly O-T-T. Welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you, Vinny. It's good to be with you.
Now, you've been making this video series called Secrets in Plain Sight that goes into an awful lot of very interesting things to do with architecture, ley lines, any business with occult symbolism or anything in there?
Well, that very title is Secrets in Plain Sight, and occult means hidden or secret. And so a lot of the things I'm showing are not in public awareness, so I'm trying to bring that to people's attention.
Well, you know, Scott, it's a very interesting coincidence that we've got you on today, because last night my girlfriend was showing me a new TV series called 666 Park Avenue. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't heard of it.
All right. Dig this. The devil's living in an apartment complex, right, on 999 Park Avenue, but there's a reflection McThingy around the front or whatever, so it's reverse 666. And the history of it is there was this dark occult kind of little sect called the Dragon Brotherhood, okay? And the hotel is called the Drake Hotel, which we know Drake means dragon, and all the floors are black and white tiles like the Masonic Brotherhood. I thought that was very interesting.
That is very interesting. It reminds me of 666 Fifth Avenue in New York City, which is right across the street from Rockefeller Center. And it has a lot of interesting symbolism in it as well. I wrote a blog post about that, which is just called 666.
Would you be able to explain the significance of that?
Well, I think that people tend to think it's the devil's number, right? But I see it differently. I see it as part of a family of numbers that are all single repetitive digits, like 555, 666, all of the numbers like that. And they have sort of I would think of it as a hyper-dimensional signature, something that comes to us from a higher dimension. And people that use these numbers are in some way tuning into that knowledge. I would say that the Washington Monument is a fascinating monument to this relationship in that it is 555 feet 5 inches high. It's actually, I think it was intended to be 555 feet 5.5 inches high, but it actually came in just 3/8 of an inch less in reality. But that number is equal to 6,666 inches. So there we have this amazing connection in the world of measurement between fives and sixes. And I have a lot to say about the relationship of six to five, and I go into that in my movies and in my book and blog and so on. But 666 is just one of these examples of these repetitive numbers, like 1111. A lot of people are interested in that so-called master number. A lot of people see that time. They you know, does this ever happen to you, where you just look up and it's 1:11 p.m. or it's 11:11 a.m.?
Well, I got up yesterday morning and my computer was shut down and my phone was plugged into it, you know, on a little USB charger. And so when I turned my computer on, my phone flashed on and it's got the clock on it. It was 9:11 a.m.
There you go. Yeah, I think that what happens is if you're tuned into a particular number, let's say you're thinking a lot about 9:11 and that mega ritual, then you're going to see 9/11s all over the place. And it's going to be, it's going to seem like it's more than coincidence that this number is popping up in your reality. So there's this phenomenon of synchronicity I'm really interested in, where the interior of your consciousness is reflected outside in the exterior world, sort of as a confirmation that there's this interconnection between all things.
Yeah, it's like that with me in the number 33. What's interesting, though, is I watch a little bit of cartoons as well, like Family Guy. Have you ever heard of this show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Family Guy, Stewie Griffin and Brian Griffin, they're teleporting around, and they teleport into this the Super Bowl. And the announcer goes, "Welcome to Super Bowl 33." I was like, okay. And then there was another one where there was these two basketballers coming out. One's number 32 and one's number 33. And there was another one, I think, on an American Dad, was made by the same guy. And they're sitting in this, what's it called? In this man's mansion, you know, like a man cave. And they've got a scoreboard for one of those little, sort of like a skee ball machine. And the score's 33. Well, they're sitting there talking on the couch, just in the top left-hand corner. And I don't think that's coincidence when it's in a piece of artwork or a television show or a movie. I don't think that can be left to straight coincidence. Not if you see it, as I have, in almost every single episode.
Yeah, these things tend to pop out at you, don't they? I see these numbers every place. And it reminds me of in the movie The Matrix, the original movie, Neo's passport expired on September 11th, 2001. Which is just funny that how could that be? Why would that happen, you know? There's so many of these things that give you pause to reflect upon the nature of reality. Is there a global conspiracy that's happening where people are placing these numbers in the public domain? Or is it something more subtle? Are these numbers percolating up through the art director's mind who put that passport in that movie? And maybe that person wasn't even consciously aware of that date at that time, of the significance that date would have. Because that movie came out, I believe it was in 99. And nevertheless, the number is there. So I tend to think it's more of this latter explanation quite often. And that's not to say that conspiracies don't exist, because they certainly do. But I think that quite often people are, they follow a hunch or something, and they end up creating a building that's 864 feet high, or they end up requesting the city planning department for an address, which is 555 California Street or something like that. Why didn't they choose 557? You know, there's certainly a ring to these numbers, and we may not consciously understand it, but there's definitely something there where you choose certain numbers preferentially over others, and it tends to boil down to just a short list of numbers. And so that's
kind of going by feel.
I'm sorry?
Do these numbers have certain sensations or connotations affected with them? Like, are you going by feel in some cases? You know, just for some reason I felt like that was the right number.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how people end up choosing them. But I think that in reality there's probably more to it. And I would say that you can get in touch with that by studying number and looking at each one of the numbers, 1 through 9, and trying to, you know, feel its character. And I would say that the number 6 forms a hexagon. Hexagons are seen as structural elements in the natural world. Like if you have a stack of drinking straws or logs, they form hexagonal patterns. Bees make hexagonal honeycombs. There's a giant hexagon on the north pole of Saturn that is in the shape of a hexagon. And there's been two NASA spacecraft that have photographed it and it's a persistent piece of geometry that's larger than the Earth, that's in the form of a hexagon. And so I think the hexagon boils down to being this kind of structural element. You can think of it as sort of a dead or skeletal structure that the natural life uses or needs. And then I think five is quite the opposite. Five is sort of representing life because it forms the pentagram, the pentagon. The pentagram has phi embedded in it fractally, and phi is so much a part of all living things, from sunflowers to the human body. You find phi relationships there. And so, in a way, this ratio that I look at, I look at the relationship of six to five. It's sort of the relationship of the non-living to the living, or structure to life. And it's in that relationship or marriage that we find the alchemy. And I think that's sort of what the Washington Monument is sort of about, ultimately. It's this union of opposites. If you look at the Washington Monument, it's hard to not see it as a phallic symbol, right? Well, what's surrounding it is a vesica Pisces in the landscaping around it, which is a feminine symbol. So we have this sort of bringing together of male and female energies embodied in this obelisk, which is quite interesting.
I've always found it interesting that they've got this massive phallic symbol so close to the White House, where it's occupied by another giant phallic symbol, the president.
That's right. It's very close to it.
Yeah. I've got a joke for you. Do you know why six is afraid of seven?
Why?
Because 7, 8, 9.
There you go. Actually, my son told me that one not long ago. You know, it's a great joke for the younger age group.
Yeah. Maybe lost on both of us. Anyway, moving on. There's also a number of different elements that I've looked for in my home city of New Zealand. And have you noticed how there's usually some kind of giant spire phallic symbol in the middle of major urban centres? And in Auckland, we've got this giant thing called the Sky Tower. There's a giant phallic syringe-type thing, you know, jutting out into the sky. And we've also got what's known as One Tree Hill on Coyle Park, which is a 330-hectare piece of land that's owned by Freemasons New Zealand. And the Masonic obelisk at the top is, I believe, 33 metres tall.
Now, it seems so unlikely that the area of the land would be 330 hectares unless that was planned, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It reminds me very much of the George Washington National Masonic Memorial in Alexandria, Virginia. And this is 333 feet high. And it's a replica of the Lighthouse of Alexandria, Egypt. And it has a gigantic Freemason symbol out front. The compass is in square. And I don't see anything wrong with that, with using these numbers, because it's tuning into the harmonics of the universe. See, that's the part that people generally aren't aware of. The significance of these numbers, right? And that's what I'm trying to show. 33 is an incredible number. And I can go into some of that for you later if you like.
I really would like you to, but what I'd heard is that the reason why these obelisks are put in centers of areas is somehow alluded to drawing Luciferian energy down into the area or something like that. Can you corroborate or dismiss that?
Well, I don't know. I don't have any proof or disproof of that. That's sort of a statement that's hard to to evaluate, I guess, because I don't have anything more to say that's not true or that is true. It certainly could be. And I think the important thing is to keep an open mind and to keep that potential theory running in your mind, that there could be some kind of control grid that's connecting all the obelisks, you know, in some kind of matrix or something.
Ley lines.
Ley lines, right. And on the other hand, another theory is just that these are like acupuncture points on the Earth, and they're harmonizing with the Earth energies in a more natural, holistic way.
Yeah. And well, so the Chinese...
The way to find out is to go there and feel it yourself. And
we're coming to break now, Scott. The Chinese built a lot of pyramids in China, and they said that, yeah, it was like acupuncture, balancing the earth's chi, they said. We'll be right back with Scott Onstott, ladies and gentlemen.
Wayne rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual.
Welcome back.
I am not credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and profound.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Scott Onstott from... hold on a second. I'm just kind of messing up today. I don't know. It's the end of the week. I'm very tired.
Canada. I live in British Columbia.
Cambridge, Columbia. Well, that's nice.
I live on a remote island called Cortez Island.
Cortez Island? Mm-hmm. Is there a stolen Aztec gold somewhere near you as well?
No, but there was once a Spanish ship that passed this way, and they named a few of the islands here. And then they never came back. So we're left with the names, though.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, anyway, back onto this. I wanted you to actually explain the significance and elaborate on the number itself, 33.
Sure. 33 is, in my mind, it's sort of like it represents the whole range. And 32 is like... In the Scottish Rite, that's the highest degree that you can earn on your own, and then only a few individuals are tapped or selected to become the 33rd degree members. And this relationship is similar to the human spine, where we have 32 bones in the spinal column, and then the 33rd bone, if you will, is the skull. And so... you have to work your way up through all of the Jacob's ladder, if you will, up the spine, and then you become a master when you reach the highest level. And in the natural world, this number is echoed in the sun, because the sun is 333,000 times more massive than the Earth. And I was amazed that when I came across an article in 2010, that said that scientists at Stanford University discovered that the sun's core rotates once every 33 days. And the sun has a volume that's 33 orders of magnitude larger than, let's say, a pair of dice or a marble, something that would fit in the palm of your hand. And then if you look down into the microscale, the Planck length, which is the smallest measurable length in the quantum scale, is 33 orders of magnitude smaller than that object in the palm of your hand. So that marble in your hand is right in the middle, if you will, between the Planck length and the sun. So it's kind of beautiful if you look at it that way. But 33 is always this ladder. It's the full range, all the way down and all the way up.
And, as above, so below.
Exactly, as above, so below. And then another thing that's quite interesting is that if you want to go in a spaceship and leave the Earth, you have to go a certain speed to do that. It's called escape velocity. Well, that's just beyond Mach 33. You have to exceed Mach 33. That's 33 times the speed of sound in order to escape from the gravity well of Earth. And then it just so happens that Mach 33 is 11.1 kilometers per second. There's those repetitive ones again. On the other hand, if you want to go into the Earth, into the ocean, if you go every 33 feet below the surface of the ocean that you go, that's one atmosphere. Another way of thinking of that is that the entire Earth's atmosphere has the pressure equivalent to a column of water 33 feet high. And so these are some of the natural resonances that we have with 33 and our systems of units. So this is also very key, is the way that we measure things is implicated in this system. And in mythology,
how does it translate from the metric to the imperial measurement systems? Is I think like a meter is 3 point something feet, and 10 meters is 33 feet. Is that correct?
That sounds about right. I know that the way I think of it is 1 mile is approximately equal to 5 kilometers. So phi is 1.618. And so that's sort of how those systems are connected in a way, is through the golden number, the golden ratio. And I hit upon a discovery in metrology that involves the 6/5 ratio, 6 over 5, or that's equivalent to the decimal 1.2. So 6/5 times 33,333,333 meters is the polar circumference of the Earth. And it's very accurate. I don't have the number in front of me, but I think it's in excess of 99.9% accurate. And so the metric system is sacred in a way, contrary to popular belief, because it's very elegantly expressing the size of the Earth. And then there was a gentleman named John Charles Webb Jr. who discovered that the Great Pyramid's location on the Earth is encoded by light speed in meters per second. It's at 29 point, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but 29.9 something 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 degrees north. And if you just use all the numbers for light speed, and it's 299 million something 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 meters per second, and the numbers are exactly the same. And so the Great Pyramid is located using light speed in meters per second. And that sounds absurd, because how could the ancient Egyptians have known the metric system or light speed or been able to accurately survey the Earth with such precision? And I think the answer, we have to look into some areas like higher dimensions, because the people who put the pyramid there, maybe they were impulsed or influenced, or they just had a hunch that this is the place where this structure has to go. It could be like that, or it could be extraterrestrials came down and were the architects and told the human builders to go ahead and build it right here and didn't share with them the knowledge of why. That could also be.
But, well, the placement of the pyramids also mirrors the Orion's Belt constellation too, doesn't it?
That's right. Robert Bival and Adrian Gilbert wrote that book, The Orion Mystery, back in the 90s, about that. And it's uncanny. Those three pyramids perfectly mirror the heavens above. And so the pyramids, or the Great Pyramid in particular, is just full of information and wisdom that can be unpacked and decoded. For example, Graham Hancock wrote about the number 432 and how it relates to the pyramid and how the pyramid encodes the the circumference of the Earth and the polar radius. And if memory serves, I think the perimeter of the base times 43,200 is the number of feet in the Earth's equatorial circumference. It's either feet or miles, I don't recall. And then the height of the Great Pyramid times 43,200 is equivalent to the Earth's polar radius, again, in feet or miles. I don't recall the unit there.
Isn't there some sort of significant frequency as well that's 432 hertz?
Yes, it is. There's a movement in opera to reset the tuning. The concert pitch is currently 440 hertz worldwide for the A above middle C. And there's a movement to make that a little flatter down to 432 hertz because apparently it's a lot easier on the human voice. And it seems to have a much greater resonance with as above, so below. When you key your whole musical system to this number 432, you're tying in with a huge amount of information. If you look at what is half of 432, it's 216, which is 6 times 6 times 6. What is half of 216 is 108. And 108 is a number that's long been associated with the moon Japa Mala prayer necklaces. I have 108 beads. I believe the emergency telephone number in India is 108 instead of 911. And the lunar radius is 1,080 miles. And it goes, there's a whole laundry list of 108 correspondences. I'll give you one more. The element silver has an atomic weight of 108, and silver has always been associated with the moon. And if we go the other way from 432, if we double it, we get 864. And that's the solar number, because the sun's diameter is 864,000 miles. And I believe that's 99.9% accurate.
So does that mean, in a sense, that the number 432, or at least the 432 hertz, is kind of like a resonant frequency for humans in between the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun? So it's kind of like a nexusing sort of frequency, sort of thing.
Yeah, you could think of it that way. It's in this progression that starts with 108, and it moves all the way up to 3, 4, 5, 6. Because if you double 864, you get 1728. And if you double that, you get 3, 4, 5, 6, which has a nice sequential ring to it, doesn't it? And I believe the polar radius of the Earth in Egyptian royal miles is 3, 4, 5, 6 Egyptian royal miles. So all of these systems are resonating with this sequence, which is kind of amazing. There's nothing in science which says that should be the case.
I've also got this question as well. I'd like to ask you.
Yeah.
These numbers have significance and they have connections and things of that nature. But do they have a physical or measurable effect if you were to perhaps place a building on a particular area, or make it a particular height, or put it on a particular land with a particular circumference,
I don't think that you can measure it with our current electromagnetic instruments and figure out why it means why it's significant at this point. But I don't think it would be impossible to do that. We may have a trace of it in our physical reality. There may be a shadow of this higher dimension here that may be measurable, but I don't know the technology for that at this point. I think it's a subtle energy, and I think people that are sensitive can sometimes feel it or tune into it. And, you know, I don't claim to have that ability myself, but I stumble on these correspondences and find it fascinating. I have another structure that just popped to mind, and that is, when I was a teenager, I was learning to drive a stick shift in the parking lot of this particular government building in California. And I found out only a couple of years ago that its latitude is 33 degrees, 33 minutes, and 33 seconds north. It's called the Chet Holyfield Federal Building, and it's in the shape of a ziggurat. The building is known in the area as the ziggurat.
I don't know what a ziggurat is, I'm sorry.
What's that?
I don't know what a ziggurat is, I'm sorry.
A ziggurat is a Babylonian-style pyramid or a step pyramid. It's similar to the ziggurats in Iraq. And this particular structure has on its seventh and highest level the Department of Homeland Security. And I find that really fascinating. It was also designed by William Pereira, who is the architect who designed the Transamerica Pyramid in San Francisco, another highly symbolic structure that I showed. I went into some of the details about that in my Volume 1 film. But that structure, if you include its mast, is 864 feet high. So it resonates with the sun. And it's like, I think of it as America's tallest obelisk.
Have you heard of the Pyramid of the Sun in Bosnia that was recently discovered?
Yes, that's an amazing structure. Apparently, it's very large.
It's bigger than the Pyramid of Giza, something like 700 plus feet.
Yes, it's huge. There's lots of pyramids still yet to be discovered, and only in the last couple of years they've been doing this satellite archaeology where they've been discovering buried cities in Egypt. It's incredible what people are finding, even in Google Earth. They're just noticing things. And
Scott, unfortunately, we're coming to break. I'd like to actually continue this right after it in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Scott.
I got some so-called friends. My right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah, welcome back to the Vinnie Ezra Show. My very special guest, Scott Onstott from Secrets Hidden in Plain Sight. And we've been talking about numbers and architecture and things of that nature. And you were getting on to ziggurats and something else, the new pyramids being discovered and what have you. So, I don't know, has there been a big study of ziggurats called the Ziggurat Papers or something, and do you need some kind of a filter in order to smoke them?
I don't know. Yeah, ziggurats are like pyramids, you know, but they have steps instead of smooth sides. And the way I think it worked is that they had usually seven steps on the ziggurat, and that they represented the whole hemisphere of the Earth as they divided it into seven bands. And so it was sort of like a map of the world, or an axis mundi. This is a primal impulse, is to create your temple as a microcosm of the larger world. And this is one way to do it, is to make a mountain and have it represent the whole Earth. And you can do that with measurements and with symbols and so on. And another way is to encode distances between sacred sites. So let me get back to the number 864. There's a lot there. If we look at the distance between Stonehenge and Silbury Hill, it's 86,400 feet. And this was discovered by John Michell and Robin Heath in a book called The Lost Science of Measuring the Earth. They also analyzed Silbury Hill and found that the cross-section of it is all proportioned in units of 8.64 feet. So that's incredible that somehow this number was not only encoded in the design of this man-made mountain, which is the largest Neolithic mountain in Europe, I believe, encoded there, and also they encoded it in the distance from that mountain to Stonehenge. Also, if we look at the number of seconds in a day, there are 86,400 seconds in a 24-hour period. There's those numbers again. It all relates to the sun, moon, earth system. Remember, the sun's diameter is 864,000 miles. When I say something like that, I don't mean it's exactly, precisely 864,000 miles and no change. But it is 99.9% accurate. So there's always a tiny little inaccuracy there, which is generally less than a tenth of a percent. And the way I understand that is that there's sort of a template or blueprint that is in a higher dimension, and it is exact. But in our real world, it's always going to be slightly off. And that has to do with, for example, on a sunflower, we have a 5-spiral there. And it's just slightly off from the perfect 5-spiral because you can't have a fractional seed. You have to have a whole seed, right? So the spiral is going to actually use the Fibonacci sequence rather than the spiral. You can also look at it in music. There's a slight gap called the Pythagorean comma, and that is... I think there's, if you have 12 perfect fifths, they go up almost perfectly 7 octaves, but not quite. It's just slightly off. And there's that little gap there again. Now back to 864, I noticed that the 35-millimeter film format that's used in cameras and in full-frame digital SLRs today, it has an area of 864 square millimeters. So we have this solar number representing the area of a photograph. And what is a photograph but something that captures light? So it seems very apropos that particular dimension is used to capture light because it resonates with the sun.
Could I propose to you a theory? Mm-hmm. These numbers seem to encode everything, whether or not we're aware of them. Is it possible that these numbers, regardless of our awareness of them, truly govern our lives and the way the Earth kind of goes about its business and the universe itself?
I think so. I think that it's these numbers are keys to understanding our universe and understanding how everything really works. I think that it's sort of a lost science that we're in the process of rediscovering, and I think it's also evidence of higher consciousness because it is certainly not random, and it is so not random that I can't imagine that it would just happen in some kind of chaotic process. It's either part of some kind of matrix that is so brilliant and so far beyond my understanding, or it's the product of a mind. Maybe in some way we're all in the mind of God, and you could say that this is a matrix if we're in this imagination space, which is all ultimately based on mathematics and geometry. I think it all boils down to that. This is basically like the code that underpins our reality. are these numbers and these geometries.
Is that why it's called sacred geometry? Because it's actually one to do with God?
I think so. You can look at it that way. It's sacred because it's when you realize the brilliance of it, it's so staggering that I think the word that pops to mind is sacred. Unbelievable geometry, or believable but mind-blowing geometry would be another adjective to describe it. But so often in our secular world, we don't really even understand the word sacred anymore, and we think that's some kind of religious connotation, and it doesn't have to be. It can be, but I don't think it has to be tied with religion necessarily. It should be tied more with spirituality, which is what the impulse of religion, all religions are inspired from, essentially, is from spirituality.
I would believe that the most mainstream religions are inspired from spirituality, but then grew in order to shut it out and keep it away from people.
That's right, yeah. I think that all too often religions become they become corrupted, and they become a system of control. And, for example, if you connect directly with God and you have some experiences in your, you know, phenomenological experiences in meditation or whatever, I think the church would say, you can't have that. You know, you have to have one of our priests or something is the connection to God. And, you know, at least that's the downside of religion, is they want to have sort of a monopoly on spirituality.
It sounds very similar to the structure of drug dealing, whereby in order to protect your business interests, you make sure that everybody's got a middleman to go through.
Yeah. It's a classic system, system of distributors. But it's
like
not
Blockbuster
necessary.
Video.
I think you can connect directly with it. I think in a way, all these numbers are a means of reconnecting with spirituality in a rational way. You can say, okay, rationally, you can look into all these numbers that I'm saying, look them up yourself, do a little research, and then you'll probably realize that there is really a mystery there also. And it's sort of a gateway into spirituality, into the sacred realm.
Could that mean that it's also conversely a gateway into, like, let's say that's a positive realm that you could get into, you know, godly spirituality. Mm-hmm. Could it go the other way into darkness and evil?
It certainly could, yeah. You could, if I talk about the reality of higher dimensions, and there could be, you know, beings there, they could be angels or demons there, right? So it just depends on who you're resonating with and who you want to contact, right? So I think that's a open possibility that some of these things could be done, at the behest of demons, whereas other things could be done at the behest of angels, and then other things could be done, even transcending the subtle realm and going into the causal, formless realm, which sort of transcends duality. You could even go in and have non-dual mysticism that could be influencing the people, the decision makers here on the ground. You know, if you were a higher dimensional being and you wanted to express some beautiful truths about the universe, it might be a very efficient way to influence certain key architects to build buildings in a certain way, in the hopes that people would eventually realize what these buildings were encoding. That might be one way to do it.
Well, Scott, we've got one more hour coming up after this break, and so far it seems we keep getting interrupted by breaks just as soon as we get going. quite frustrating because we want to hear more from you. Conveniently, we have another hour. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Scott on Star. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Bear in mind that this show only exists because of your generous donations and subscriptions from the as little as $1 to $5 a month, where you can get the commercial-free archive. So if you either subscribe or donate, I send you the links to the ad-free archives pages and things like that. Believe me, if there's no ads, not only does it save you an awful lot of listening time, about maybe nearly 30 minutes per show, per two-hour show, but also that kind of flow that you get from... jumping from one subject to a to the next, I think is actually far more enhanced if you're just listening to it straight through. It's like, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, and then we're back, you know. So at the moment, we're in desperate need of your support, both myself and AmericanFreedomRadio.com. So if you do appreciate what we do here on the network, and what I do here on this show, giving a platform to people who otherwise would never be recognized or interviewed by mainstream media scumbaggery, then please give generously, because if you don't, we may not be around too much longer. This is the problem when you're telling the truth. Friend David Andrew Christensen said yesterday, you know, Vinny, if I got the money from my books and all the stuff that I'm doing, I'd buy you that new Mac that you've been after. And I said, really? Are you telling the truth? He's like, yeah. Then you're not going to be able to afford to get me that Mac, bro. It's just that simple. This world is based on lies and deceit. And usually those are the things that are rewarded. I think we can change that, but we've got to take personal responsibility for it. So go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate or subscribe to me. And if you don't like me in particular, but you like some of the other shows on the network, such as Kevin Barrett or Christy or Mel Fabregas, who we give a little bit of a platform to, and many others, go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on that donate banner there to support the network. Now, back to my guest, Scott Onstott. Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, I really do resonate with what you're just saying there about, you know, giving a small donation to the things that you enjoy. You know, I think that's really important. It's sort of like voting with your dollars. You just give a little bit, and it enables the researchers and the people that you like to hear, it allows them to continue doing that. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
It truly is. And I've occasionally been brought to tears just by looking at my inbox and seeing the donations come in, and just, you know, I'm so grateful just that I can continue doing this.
I'd like to encourage the sort of gift economy in the world somehow. You know, if we all just gave little bits, $5, $10, whatever, here and there, it would enable all kinds of different truthful, insightful research to be carried out, you know. So enough of that.
It's of course, once you've got an audience. I was just talking with my girlfriend Sarah over the break. For the first 3-4 years doing this radio show and going out and filming public meetings and things like that, I just couldn't work, and she was supporting me this whole time. And without her support, you know, just making sure that I was able to keep doing what I'm doing, just, you know, living on the bones of her ass, really, on her back. I just told her, you know, how grateful I am
for their early support and her ongoing support. So I think, you know, you really got to appreciate what you got sometimes.
Oh, that's right. I think getting into the spirit of gratitude is the key to abundance, really, is to just being happy and grateful for what you do have, whatever it is.
Yeah. Speaking of which, how can people support you, Scott?
Well, if you'd like my video, you can go ahead and watch it for free on my site, my Volume 1 film. If you really enjoy it, it would be great if you go ahead and buy it on DVD. And I have a Volume 2 film. You could purchase that on DVD also. I have a book. You can get a hard copy or an ebook copy, which you can download right away. It's all there at secretsinplainsight.com.
Secretsinplainsight.com. All right, I'll make sure to also put that on the archive section of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, those links for people. So if you're listening to this live and you want to re-listen to it, and that's also another thing that I encourage people to do is a lot of the times when we're talking about this kind of intricate information, as we do, Scott, listening to it the once, it's kind of in one ear, out the other. And repetition is actually something that was used in medieval times as a way of memorizing and to be able to remember these things that you learn. So I encourage people to do that.
That's right.
As
and a
well.
Picture is worth a thousand words. And when you see my film, a lot of these concepts are expressed graphically, and you can comprehend them much more quickly than you can with words, and I'm really fumbling around with words trying to explain things when really a video or something of a sacred geometry, you can understand it in a few seconds, and I can spend 10 minutes trying to describe it all, and you still won't quite be able to get it unless you see the picture of it. So there's the added benefit for your right brain in looking at the images.
So in this area of research, and this is an element that I was thinking about, is I know a lot of people who get into this kind of research, many of which stay very grounded and very calm, some of which become obsessive and kind of go off the deep end and that sort of thing. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you ever met people like this?
Oh, yeah. It's all too often the case when people start discovering things that are secret. They get really excited about it, and they go too far, or they don't keep an open mind about it, and they decide that it's got to be this. The reason for it has to be this or that, and they may or may not be correct. But my approach is to try to keep a neutral or rational approach and try to present you with all the information and then leave it up to you to make your own conclusion about it. And I think that, well, that approach is one that I've been complimented on a lot, and it leaves it in your court. You get to decide whether it's a Luciferian conspiracy or a aliens behind it all, or just coincidence and nothing more to it, or whatever. You get to make those decisions, and I'm just presenting the facts, and you can verify the facts and check it out, you know. So that's my take on it.
Mm-hmm. I do also think that when you put belief added onto the facts, like, here's what happened, and then somebody theorizes as to why it happened, and they're so sure of themselves, I think that's really quite dangerous in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I'm very rarely sure of myself when it comes to things that I believe.
Yeah, that's right. It has to do with your perspectives in life, and I think that everyone's at a different stage in their personal journey, their life journey. And if you look back on your own life, if you introspect on that, the things that you are open to now maybe are, there's, you have more perspectives available to you now than you did, say, 10 years ago, if you just introspect on your own past. And So you have to have respect for other people that may, they may not be open to certain ideas yet, but they may be in the future, you see. And I know that in my own life, that was certainly the case.
Youth is wasted on the young.
I'm sorry?
You know the old saying that youth is wasted on the young?
That's right, yeah. Well, we all have to go through that, don't we? We all have to make this lifelong effort to grow up and wake up. And neither is easy, but the journey is well worthwhile, in my opinion. And it's a process that never ends until you pass away. And even then, we may come back again. So what are you going to do with the next 30,000 years?
Yeah. I've always found it ironic how children look at people that are older than them and call them grown-ups as if they've grown up.
Yeah, it's all too often. There's a lot of people who are at a arrested state of development, even as older people. But I think I really admire people that are always trying to expand their consciousness, to take other people's perspectives and try them on and see how that works for you. And you don't have to commit to it. You can just evaluate it and see if it makes any sense to you. And if it doesn't, at the end of the day, fine. You don't have to keep looking through my glasses. You can forget about it. But if there's something that I'm showing you that allows you to look at reality in another way, then that can be beneficial. That could be transformative. Could allow you to look at things and to have new tools, basically, to look at reality.
Well, people just need to be wary of this because I'm sure you've had these conversations with people before is, if there was something to it, I would have heard about it already or it would have been told to me or something like that. And it's just like, bro, are you saying to me that you currently know all knowledge that is of significance and everything that you don't currently know is insignificant?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing when you think of it that way. But at a certain stage of development, sort of, let's say, at a fundamentalist stage of development, people are quite happy getting all of their information from, say, one book, and they don't need other information. But later, if you are fortunate enough to have certain life conditions that allow you to, that support you and allow you to grow, you might look at things more rationally, and then you would think that you want to read all of the books. You want to read as much as you can to gain more knowledge. But that impulse doesn't happen until a certain stage that not everyone gets to. And so for those people that are more shut down, they have more limited options available to them, I think it's important to give them respect because you have to remember you yourself must have been in that situation earlier in your life, eh?
But, were you in that situation earlier? And if so, what changed it for you?
Well, yes, I was. When I was, let's say, up until the age of about 13, I was involved in fundamentalist Christianity. And around that age, I started asking questions, more and more questions, and those questions were not appropriate questions. They were not supported. I was asking the wrong questions or something, and I was told not to ask those questions. And that just wasn't satisfying to me. I had more of an inquiring mind, and I wanted to know more. So that eventually, I made a break from that, sadly, because I think spirituality is very important, but the packages that we often have today there's not often a clear way to move up to the next level. I think that's a failing in the conflict between science and religion. And that's something that can be healed, I think, because there are rational approaches to spirituality. But I didn't become aware of that until, say, 25 years later.
Did you by chance have one of those so-called aha moments?
I've had many epiphanies throughout my life, and especially in the last 10 years, say. And when you have those aha moments, it sort of, your mind expands in a way, and it just won't fit back in those smaller boxes that it used to be in, you know?
I've noticed that I became addicted to those aha moments, and if I don't have one every now and again, I start to get really frustrated that I'm still where I am in my consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It can be addictive when you're moving along and you're like, yeah, this is great, and then you're like stagnating and you're wondering what's wrong. Why don't I have these epiphanies as frequently? Yeah, and I noticed that with the time codes. When I'm really on my path, I'm seeing synchronicity all the time in so many ways. And when I'm not on that path of discovery, these things happen less frequently, and I need more of a period of rest. But you know, it can't all be roses. Sometimes you need to process your shadow elements or whatever, and work through your life and before you're able to go ahead and keep at it. One thing personally, I've had a different perspective on things is that I was actually born without both of my legs below the knee, and my hand, my right hand, I don't have my right hand. I was born without these limbs because of a rare birth defect. And so I walked on artificial legs all my life. And as I was growing, a new pair every year. And this has given me a different perspective than most people, and I'm actually grateful for it, because it, at an early age, that I am not my body. I'm something, my body is defective, and my body does fine, really. I can get along just fine. I have artificial legs. I can walk around. You wouldn't know it if you met me, unless I told you that, like I did. But it's allowed me to see beyond the body, that I'm a spirit in inhabiting a body. And so that's something that a lot of people are not aware of, I don't think. They identify wholly with their bodies. And
Hold on, Scott. Yeah. Well, I identify wholly with my commercial breaks, and we're coming up to one now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes with Scott on Start. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. If you are listening in New Zealand, it is Tuesday through Saturday, not Monday through Friday, because we broadcast live from the future. My very special guest is Scott Onstott from SecretsInPlainSight.com. Over the break, I was thinking, Scott, when I talk to brilliant men such as yourself, the thing that I really most want to get from you is what you're not quite figured out yet. What are some of the things, based on your current research and your life, that you're still wondering about that you just haven't quite figured out?
Well, just about everything I'm still wondering about, and looking at more evidence in cities of these numbers and geometries and alignments, is there a world grid behind it? Is there some kind of overarching plan there? That's what I'm interested in finding out. I'm also really interested in consciousness and exploring different states and stages of consciousness, because I think that all of these secrets in plain sight ultimately boil down to consciousness, questions of consciousness. And I think that often the problems that we have in the world are problems of consciousness and problems of spirituality of being blocked. And so if I can contribute in some way, I'm looking for ways to do that. And so I've created two films, volumes one and two, and I have ideas for volume three, but it hasn't crystallized yet. I'm still in a research phase there. But yeah, I'm a person that's interested in a great number of things, and I don't claim to have figured it all out, and that's what it's about here, is trying to figure it out, I think. Life is like a big learning experience. It's an opportunity to really advance your consciousness, I think. And that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to work on that. Not always that successfully, but sometimes more than others. Anyway.
In terms of challenges, have you had barriers put in your way that you've had to overcome in order to get these films and continue your work and research? I mean, what's your main source of funding? I mean, are you still working doing your architecture?
Yeah, how I've been making my living the last 15 years or so is writing technical books, primarily to architects and engineers. I was educated as an architect, and I worked in San Francisco for about 6 years, and learned a great deal in my early 20s, and then I taught a lot in San Francisco also, but since then I've been selling instructional videos and writing books on AutoCAD and Photoshop and 3ds Max and SketchUp, and those things have been my livelihood. And you know, they still are. And so I had to take a year off to create Secrets in Plain Sight Volume 1. And fortunately, I had some products that were selling very well at that time. And that allowed me to take time off and develop the whole film. But then after that, I had to go back. I had to write a few more books on AutoCAD and Photoshop. I have AutoCAD 2012 and 13, and now I'm working on 14, Essentials. And I have published a book called Photoshop CS6 Essentials. And that's more for a general audience. If you're wanting to learn Photoshop, that's a good place to start. And so I have this balance between making money with my software knowledge and teaching ability, and on the other hand, doing research and creating films on hidden and esoteric subjects. And, you know, I'd like the balance to be more towards Secrets in Plain Sight and less of the software tutorials, but that's a process that I'm engaged in now and trying to shift that balance over. But it's not something that happens overnight. So that's sort of my dramatic tension in my life, is trying to drum up more business for my films on Secrets in Plain Sight. And so that's where I'm at.
I completely resonate with that. First couple of years doing this radio show and others making films about activism and stuff like that, you know how when you do odd jobs, things like that, just to make a little bit of extra money so you can just keep doing what you're doing. I was making dance party videos, so I was being invited to parties and filming them, making the videos for YouTube, things like that. And it's only been in the last year or so that I realized I don't need to do those anymore. I've reached the level that I wish to, which was to be able to do this and only this for my source of income, because I believed at the time, and I still believe it now, that this element of my life, this research element, the betterment of mankind, is a frackload more important than dancing around being drunk.
That's right. Certainly. And it would be wonderful if we could figure out an economic system that could support us each to do what we feel inspired to do. And that has been the the story of humanity for a long time and trying to figure out a better way to do that. And we're not quite there yet. But, you know, again, it's important to be grateful for the time you do have to spend on your creative projects, on your passions, on what you want to do in this life. And, you know, we still have to pay the bills, don't we?
Well, I feel, economically speaking, if you're spending your time and researches for the benefit of others, maybe their knowledge or their research or their lives or something of that nature, ergo the economic support actually should have to come from those others. It's the only way I've actually figured out that this kind of realm can actually function in the current economic system. If I give to my audience something, I do not demand that they give me something back, but I do ask,
well,
and I do receive.
I think that it always works out. It, in my life, that's been the case. It always, however the mysterious process works, there's always just enough to keep going. And, you know, without having to do any marketing, really. I've never really done any marketing. I've just put things up on my website, and the right number of people buy them. You know, there's some kind of mysterious process there whereby that happens, you know.
It's like you're meant to be able to keep continuing doing what you're doing. You ever felt like that?
Sometimes I do, yeah. I certainly felt that way in creating Secrets in Plain Sight. I felt really inspired, and I worked harder on it than I'd ever worked on any project before. And you know, now it's more of a balance. I'm writing a book on AutoCAD right now, and when that's done, I'll have more time to create Volume 3. And it's exciting, isn't it? When you get in that groove of discovery and really, you know, making things happen, you know, getting it out, I find that really exhilarating. You know, it seems like that's what I'm meant to do. So, I'll go with that.
Yeah, man. For me, it was radically different. I just after having a couple of bad experiences with job after job, whether that be obtaining really high levels of income and things like that, and then just getting tired and bored of it because I was the best. And it's just as soon as I become number one at something, that's when my motivation goes away, essentially.
Yeah, because you no longer have anything to learn there. Yeah?
That's right.
You're the best. You're just like, okay, now I got to try something else to, you know, where I can apply my creative intelligence to it. Right? Is that how you feel?
That's precisely right, and that's the reason why when I was employable, I'd usually not be in a position for any longer than 6 months, because that would be as long as I'd need to surpass everybody else who'd been inducted at the same time as myself, because I always put in the extra effort. And now I'm thinking, is being the best even worth the effort? Is it instead simply finding my place?
Yeah, unless you have something to prove to yourself or others, being the very best isn't necessary, is it?
No.
But finding your place is where you want to be is a noble pursuit, I think. It's a worthwhile, you know, effort.
Well, I think finding your place is actually about your relationship with others to a large extent, you know, giving others what they don't have, if you know what I'm saying. Like, the reason I'm doing this radio show and interviewing people like yourself is because people like yourself don't have radio shows and the ability to market themselves all over the place, and activists from all over the world, whether that be in New Zealand or the United States or otherwise, they don't have the resources or the time to do things like this that I'm doing. But I do, so I give it to those who need it and or more specifically deserve it. Because the conversation that you and I have had about the numbers and the ley lines and distances and things of that nature, this is incredible information. But it's at such a highbrow level that the quantity of people that would be even capable of processing the information, let alone want to listen to it, is actually a very, very small minority in terms of the global population. Yeah. And I want to make a concerted effort to unbalance that equation. I want that group to grow.
Well, I really appreciate you inviting me on your show and making that effort. I think that there's a lot of people that have benefited from watching Secrets in Plain Sight, and yet there are vast numbers of people who haven't seen it yet and who may be ready to see it and really get something out of it. And so finding ways to reach more people is always good. And, on YouTube, if you add up the different channels where I have my videos from my Volume 1 hosted, I think I have more than 2 million views, which sounds great. But when you look on YouTube and you see a woman walking down the street with tight jeans on gets 55 million views, then you just keep things in perspective that there's a very small niche audience that's looking at my films right now. I have to say that every day, every single day, I get emails from people thanking me and or asking a question or giving me a link to something that they've found. And that interaction has been very rewarding. That, there's like a family, if you will, out there that I'm connected with electronically. And that's a good feeling.
It's precisely the same for this show, Scott. The reason why you're on the show is because one of my listeners suggested you come on. And I try to do that, you know. I've got the radio show, they don't, but they want to hear people that I've never heard about. And so here you are.
That's excellent. Yeah, we're helping each other, aren't we, in this wonderful, brave new world of the internet, where, it's incredible that we can be having this conversation even, considering the distance that we are physically apart from each other right now. And yet we can share this conversation with anyone in the world with an internet connection. I mean, maybe I'm geeking out here because I'm 42 years old and I was born before any of this was possible, but it still amazes me. The technology of this communication system is amazing when we use it for its highest purpose. But all too often it's used for, I have to say, dumbing people down or keeping people pacified, sort of bred in circuses, watching all these shows that just don't really help you at all. I think people need to, it would be helpful if people would maybe turn off their television for a while and think their own thoughts or tune in proactively to shows like this where they can learn something. It's all up to the individual, and we have that. The beautiful thing is that we all have that option right now. And, there's nothing stopping you from learning more about anything. It's all right there at the internet. So the question is, where do you get that motivation from and where do you, what avenues should you pursue? Because the problem we have now is that there's way too much noise in a way. How can you find the right shows to look at now? And that's where we need to look for people like you who, present certain speakers and present certain information for people's consideration, and it can save
a
lot of time in finding those people.
And now here we are. We've come to a break again. We'll be right back. Welcome back. There must be some kind of way out of here. Welcome back to the final segment for today with my miraculously incredible guest, who I've grown fond of after just a short conversation and the time we've had together, Scott Onstott from secretsinplainsight.com. And you were speaking before, Scott, about how if you added up all the views on your videos across the various channels and appearances you've made, it's about 2 million. And what I feel is that you brought up the example of a woman walking down the road with tight jeans getting 50 million views. And I remember one time I was trying to explain to somebody that I'd only just hit 1 million views on my YouTube channel alone. And he says, well, that's not a measure of success. After all, Chris Crocker, famous for the Leave Britney Alone video, got 20, 30, 50 million hits. And I said to him, what I'm going to say to you now, apples with apples.
That's right.
It's no comparison.
Yeah.
You're not doing the same. You're not covering the same topics. You're not appealing to the same audience. So 2 million for somebody in research with numerology and occult symbolism and things of that nature, and the very structure mathematically of the earth, our civilization, the moon and the sun and the universe itself. 2 million is a hell of an achievement.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, Secrets in Plain Sight Volume 1 is 3 hours and 45 minutes long. And so it's quite an epic film. And I actually don't recommend trying to watch it all in one sitting because there's just so much information in there. It's really more like a whole season of television in that time. And on my site, I originally had posted 23 different episodes that were about 10 to 15 minutes long. And that's a good approach, is to just watch it in chunks like that and think about it. And, you know, if anything comes up, verify it yourself on Wikipedia or do a little web research or whatever. The whole point of it is to be thought-provoking and make you want to discuss these issues with other people.
Mm. And that's actually a good point, because I had two points that I wanted to address before we finished the show, and you just touched upon the second one, discussing it with other people. In this realm, being alone is one of the things that we all kind of deal with. As soon as you start to wake up for it, you lose friends, sometimes family members don't want to talk to you anymore. Some of us lose our forms of employment, and I've found that the greatest gift that you can really bestow on somebody else is just letting them know that they're not alone in all of this.
That's very true. That's very helpful to know that you're not alone, and I've been very grateful to the fans who I'm in constant contact with. There's a community of people on Facebook that I'm in close contact with, and people are emailing me every day, and it's really been wonderful that way. There's really like a family of like-minded individuals out there that are honestly seeking to know more about the universe, to learn more about the cities, to learn more about all these occult issues and so on. So that's interesting, and those people are spread out around the world. They're not all in one place. So it's sort of like a distributed tribe, in a way. And
it's only with the internet that we've been able to come together.
And growing up.
Sorry, what was that?
It's a group of people that are waking up and growing up, you know, and evolving in their consciousness, I think. And those are the people I want to hang out with, really, the people that are trying to develop themselves.
Mm. As opposed to the negative Nancys who communicate usually only in all caps.
There you go. Yeah, there's always some hecklers in there, right, who just want to naysay, and that's fine. You know, they need to have an outlet for that. But there isn't much discussion there, is there, when you just don't like it. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. It's like, bro, you're not listening to me. This conversation's over before it began.
Well, maybe I can give you a few more numbers or something to round this out, if you like.
Well, we have about 6 minutes left. Do you have anything on that plane?
Yeah. Well, I could tell you some things about 864. In your neighboring country there in Australia, in the capital city, Canberra, there's a parliamentary triangle. And my friend Jan Tholstrup, who's connected with me on Facebook originally, he pointed out that that triangle has a perimeter of 8,640 meters. Again, we have the 864. I noticed that the land axis of that triangle, that is, a line running right through the middle of it, going to the Australian War Memorial, has a bearing of 216 degrees from true north, and that is 6 times 6 times 6. And, of course, 216 is part of that whole sequence of numbers that we were talking about earlier, the next being 432. And so it's clear that Walter Burley Griffin and his wife, Marion Griffin, created this design, and they encoded these numbers in that plan, and I've never seen it published anywhere. It's been a secret in plain sight. And there you go, encoded in the capital city there.
Have you seen the Capitol building, the Parliament building there?
Incredible structure there. I sort of think it's like representing some kind of high-energy physics diagram or something in the plan. I still don't really have my mind wrapped around that entire building because it is clearly full of symbolism. I know that the flagpole is 81 meters high, and 81 is a very key number. And I just don't think we have quite enough time to go into that particular tangent. But
well, I've had a look at that flagpole, as you say. I'm not sure if we're talking about the same one, but atop the Parliament building is four poles that join to create a sort of a pyramid. And on top of that pyramid, which they create, is the Australian flag.
That's right. It's that pyramid with a pole on that goes up from the apex of the four joined poles that goes up to 81 meters.
Nice. You know, if anybody else thinks about the Illuminati all-seeing eye at the top of the pyramid or anything like that, go to Canberra. There's a representation of it there.
Right.
This is something that drives people nuts.
Tree Hill that you mentioned in New Zealand.
Yeah, it's something that drives people crazy, eh? Because I don't know about you, but I do feel that a lot of the architecture and structure, not least of the buildings, but of our society, is sort of like crazy and sociopathic to a large degree. And to dunk your head into that water, sometimes you get what you pay for.
Yeah, I guess so. You don't necessarily have to focus on those issues, because what we do focus on becomes our reality, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
It becomes your main direction in life. And I just want to say to people, you know, don't get lost. You know, by all means, have a look down whatever path you want. Learn anything you can. But if you're, as you said, Scott, if your focus becomes evil, conspiracy, scumbaggery of some description, believe me, and I've gone through this, and maybe you have too, I started to get really, really angry and upset and aflamed. And my life became a lot harder.
David Icke and having that experience where I went through this period of tremendous angst, I suppose, in becoming aware of this global conspiracy. And I think that's a process everyone ought to go through. But you don't want to stay there in that kind of zone where you're freaked out and angry for too long, or it will have negative influences on your health.
Not least upon your social relationships, particularly with family. There's been a couple of times when I've screamed at my siblings and things of that nature for no real reason.
Yeah, you gotta. Yeah, you don't want to alienate your family. I think even if they're not on the same page, but I empathize with you. You know, this can happen where you can yell it at people and they just don't understand, and it's sort of a growth thing where you have to realize, well, maybe they're not meant to understand yet, and you don't need to force people to understand these things because. They may come to it at their own pace.
Exactly. Don't take responsibility for other people's development. That's their responsibility. Take responsibility for
yourself. The thing you are responsible for yourself.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I want to give out your website, secretsinplainsight.com, where you can learn more about the symbols and numbers and things of that nature. And I believe you also have your other website. Is that scottonstock.com, where you publish all your Photoshop books and things of that nature, yes?
That's right, yeah.
All right. So you can enjoy them in two different ways, ladies and gentlemen. You can either learn the thing that he makes his money off, or you can learn the thing that he spends his money on.
There you go. Thanks very much, Vinny. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise, man. Likewise. Never underestimate the power of collaboration, and never underestimate the power of a small, determined minority to change the course of history. Because as history will show you, they're the only group of people who actually ever has. Thanks very much for your time. And thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. And we will see you again next week, if you're lucky.